Welcome back again. We are at Trade Talk with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I'm Susan Littlefield with the American Ag Network. I'm excited because Dan Hellstrom is sitting next to me as we are with U.S. Meat Export Federation, President and CEO. And what a unique, I want to use that word, what a unique time we're in right now. Even amongst all the tariffs that are happening and the discussions between countries, the demand is still there because they want high quality proteins and proteins out of America.
Yeah, without a doubt, Susan, and unique's probably the right word. I've never quite seen anything like it, but you're right. Despite all the noise, all the headwinds, all the talk, demand remains, and with low beef supplies, demand remains, I wanted to say resilient, but it's really even record-breaking in some of these countries. So starting with beef, and we all know the situation on beef supply-wise, but, you know, we're down 10% year-to-date, but almost all that's because of China. And the issue we have with China, these 400-plus plants still not relisted for China. Hopefully it will be at some point. And it's not a demand issue. Our customer base in China desperately wants U.S. beef, $1.6 billion market last year. But outside of China, this is where I get excited. The rest of the world's not only picking up the slack, but we're seeing certain parts of the world, and I let me point out Central America. You know, places like Guatemala, I mean, they are have been demanding all year our product, even when we were at a record high choice cutout of 420 back in whenever it was, July or August. And the question wasn't, why is your price so high? The question is, when will you retain more heifers and we'll see more supply? I don't want to pay these prices, but I'm going to because I want your quality. And this is the key. The Randy Block chart that shows 86% of our cattle grading choice or higher. And the international is contributing to that. The Walmarts, the Costcos of the world globally are all choice and higher as well. Why? Because they want that consistent eating experience, high quality taste experience. So I think this is... The middle class is emerging in a lot of these countries and willing to pay for our products.
And we're not just seeing that in beef. We're seeing that in pork as well.
Yeah, pork's even a bigger success. Last year was a record volume and value by far. And we're right now down slightly. But you look at a Mexico, which set a record last year, we're on pace to set another record easily. Same thing with Central America. Same thing with Colombia. The drag on pork slightly down has been Asia, especially in the first quarter of this year. But since then, Japan and Korea are making a comeback. So we may well end up with a very similar story as last year and maybe very close to a new record again this year.
I want to rewind and go to Mexico for a second. Yeah. Because if you've got a country that has thought outside the box in promoting American proteins, it is Mexico. And their consumers saying, this is what we want. The excitement of food trucks, the excitement of just food events, I think has just helped to build that passion for strong proteins, even with the border closed and all that whole political situation that's going on right now.
Yeah, Mexico's absolutely been amazing. Our team down there, very creative, as you pointed out. They've got a beef truck and a pork truck series that we work on where they come to events. Could be a retail event, could be a food service event. And they have tasting as an education right there on the spot. They also have a grill academy, which is an 18-wheeler, where they come in and do smoking and smoking events and other concepts. And I think you're right. The creativity is something else. But you know, this is kind of typical of the global consumer. They're wanting options. They're wanting something different. And we're trying to provide that to them. And quite frankly, the meat truck idea came from COVID.
Right.
It came from COVID because why? They couldn't do tasting demos in the store. They didn't want the close contact. But go outside where you're open air, no problem. Do whatever you want. Well, that's where it started. And it was so popular that all these retailers, in particular in Mexico, hey, I know that COVID's over and you can do demos in store, but let's keep the meat trucks outside too. And it's worked very well.
Let's talk, Dan, about the excitement around American lamb, because that's kind of like the quiet, untold story that you guys are working hard to tell.
Yeah, American lamb, always the most expensive in the world, but also the best quality in the world. And you're exactly right. Once again, that middle class and upper class, but you know, is emerging on lamb. And the big markets there would be the Caribbean region, Bermuda, for example, very big. Also Mexico. And I think in the last year, The progress made in Mexico with new cuts, it's not just lamb racks. We're talking about shoulders, breast flap, all these things that can are not necessarily overutilized in the U.S. Racks are, but these other items is where Mexico is really concentrating, and it's been a real success. And before we leave Mexico, there is nothing more important in our world than this USMCA agreement.
The
way ag is integrated between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. is amazing, and it's the case for U.S. beef, U.S. pork, and U.S. lamb. We don't need to fix something that's not broken. And I know the USMCA is up for review in 2026. We've already submitted comments. The industry has. But we need to make sure there's probably ways to make it better, but let's not blow it up and start over, because this thing's working. And, I just wanted to point that out to your listeners. This, in my opinion, protecting ads are our first priority.
I was going to ask you about that, and as you see that they're working, so you've answered that question about you've already submitted stuff, but how much is the USMCA and the workings that we have between three countries being copied or looked at by other countries to say, look what the United States has done along with Mexico and Canada. Maybe this is some sort of agreements that we could do too.
Yeah, I think the precedent that it sets, that you bring up a good point. We would hope that other people are looking at it. And just to be clear, not everyone's as happy with it as we are. You know, the tomato folks, for example, and there's others that have their issues. So maybe it's not perfect, but it definitely works for our commodities. And I think about Mexico when it started, when I started in the business a long, long time ago, and where it is today. It's just amazing progress and one of the most reliable markets in the world.
So do you see any other countries that are on the threshold that you guys have had discussions with? You may not have boots on the ground office per se, but you have staff that are helping to open up that dialogue?
Yeah, the one region that stands out is Africa as a whole. We do have staff there in South Africa and more recently, earlier this year, in Ghana. But I think if you look at the average age of the consumer in Africa is 19 years old. And it's also the fastest growing population in the world. 5 to 10 years from now, the potential middle class spending power is going to be enormous. And I just think, you know, once again, Africa's a two-pronged approach. You got the very low end, you know, beef variety meats like beef liver, beef kidney, pork liver. And then you got the very high end for like steak cuts into high end white tablecloth dining. Those are both going on today. What happens over time is it emerges to the middle, and you see the middle class buying like it has happened in Mexico. So I think not only do we have that to look forward to, but it's not going to take 40 years for it to happen like it did with Mexico. This, I think in the next 5 or 10 years, we'll be talking a lot more about Africa.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan. Dan Hellstrom joining us here during Trade Talk. I'm Susan Littlefield reporting.